Welcome to Pinpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today on Midpoint, we have two topics. Later in the show, we're going to speak with a bicycle advocate about how to make roads safer for pedestrians and bicyclists. In the first half of the show, we're going to recognize the WMNF mission calendar. This month, we're focusing on the environment. We're going to hear about an explosive environmental controversy that's brewing at the University of South Florida in Tampa, and we'll take your calls. In the meantime, you can email your thoughts to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name and let us know where you're texting from if you do send us a text. Students and faculty at USF are fighting back against the university releasing a request for information about offers to develop an area of wetlands and uplands north of the USF Tampa campus. It's a natural area north of Fletcher Avenue between Lettuce Lake Park and the Hillsborough River and the USF golf course. Yeah, I want to know if you visited that area, perhaps on a field trip with the university or for some other reason. Let us know what you think. Email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. Late last week, I interviewed Jeannie Munger. She's a PhD candidate in the Integrative Biology Department at the University of Florida. We're going to hear what she says about this potential development of that area north of USF. Here's my interview with Jeannie Munger. Jeannie Munger, thank you so much for joining me on WMNF's Midpoint today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Of course.
Well, let's get some background about you. What is it that you do at USF?
Well, I'm a PhD candidate, and I study ecological genomics of coastal and invasive plant species. So I study red mangroves here in Tampa Bay and Spartina alterniflora, which is a cord grass that is a really integral component of marsh ecosystems in Florida, but along the Atlantic coast of the United States as well. And I also do some work in Japanese knotweed, which is a significant global invasive species.
Well, the reason I asked you on today is to talk about this request for information that USF has put out to potentially develop some land that's north of Fletcher Avenue, north of the USF Tampa campus. So what is it that you know about this project?
Well, I first learned about the news from the Biz Journal article that was recently published. Rather than hearing about it from the university or through the university system. And I brought this article up to several faculty members in my department to see if they were familiar with this request for information for development plans of the USF Forest Preserve and the golf course. But no one I corresponded with was aware of it. And I learned from faculty members of other departments who also use the preserve for teaching and research that they had similarly not been informed of this request. And it's my understanding that according to a master plan document that was published within the university, that the preserve and the golf course are considered unavailable for development, at least until that document is up for revision in 2025.
And we'll talk more about this preserve and what it means to the students and the faculty there in just a second. But I do want to say that I did reach out to USF. I requested an interview from their spokesperson. They did not grant the interview request, but they did send a statement. And I'm going to read that statement so this kind of sets a little bit of the background for what this is all about. Adam Freeman says that he sent me the request for information for possible development here. He says the primary goal of the RFI is for the university to explore options that might be available on the property. The RFI allows USF to gauge interest and obtain information to consider the best strategy for a potential project, such as the possibility of a ground lease that could provide greater financial resources to support the university's mission and benefit our students, faculty, and staff. However, USF is not required to take action on any of the proposals submitted by developers. So it sounds like USF is trying to gauge interest in this area, see if they can make some money from it, but they could turn any offers down. How do you feel about just the idea that the university is putting out this request for information?
Well, I think that the implication of potential development is pretty short-sighted. And possibly too that even just the request for information or the search for potential ground leases is really being proposed without consideration for the faculty and the students, but also community partners who utilize the preserve as well as the golf course as a core university facility. And it seems to me that the university is perhaps unaware that really the overwhelming majority of the preserve property is considered a designated wetland. And from what I've seen of their proposal, they don't seem to know that at least 550 of these 700 plus acres are either completely unbuildable or are trapped within a wetland matrix of unbuildable land. So that leaves about 150 acres of golf course land and 50 acres of buildable land within the preserve. And it's really this 50 acres in the preserve that is such a valuable resource for teaching and for research in various departments within USF.
We're speaking with Jamie Munger, a PhD candidate in the Integrative Biology Department. We're talking about the possible development of 769 acres of land north of the USF Tampa campus. This is situated between Lettuce Lake Park and the Hillsborough River and the USF golf course. It includes the golf course, in fact. USF calls it the northern property, and it includes what USF is calling the USF Ecological Research Area, or USF Forest Preserve. And this is WMNF's Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. So Jeannie, I'm going to focus now on this part, the USF Ecological Research Area, or the USF Forest Preserve. You mentioned that it's important in teaching and in research. What do you mean by that?
There's really significant importance of this property as an integral resource and facility for several departments within USF, including my department, but also within geosciences, anthropology, public health, engineering, even the School of Architecture and Community Design. And so within integrative biology, we currently have several graduate students who are conducting research within the preserve, including one PhD candidate who is investigating impacts of groundwater extraction to wetland ecohydrology, which is a particularly relevant topic to public stakeholders and citizens in the Tampa Bay area. We also run several undergraduate and graduate level courses within the preserve. So this includes anything from mammalogy, vertebrate natural history, herpetology, comparative vertebrate anatomy, to field botany and wetlands ecology, and even our principles of ecology labs. Just to name a few, there are several other courses that we run. And many of these courses would have to be completely restructured if we were to lose this resource. They really are invested in the resource as a teaching tool. In addition to that, our biodiversity lab, which is a core course for anyone pursuing a biomedical or biology degree at USF, this is a course that's taught across 30 sections to 800 undergraduate students per semester. And we use that preserve as a basis for several specimen collections that we then use as teaching tools for that course. If you want to look at it from a money-making perspective, which I think is what USF is interested in, this is a huge component of a major set of degrees that are available at the university. And so I think for those of us in integrative biology, the loss of this resource would really significantly diminish our ability to engage with our students. It would diminish our ability to provide them with opportunities for practical applications of scientific research methods. I can go on. I have lots to say about this topic. From a very personal perspective, I've seen and experienced the joy that learning in this environment brings students. It brings me joy as an educator to bring students out there and to see, their faces light up when they get to look at the dynamics of ecology up close. I teach field botany, and we have a significant outdoor classroom component to that course, of which the USF Forest Preserve is a really critical part of that teaching style. And you can really feel the excitement that students have being able to engage with nature in that way. I think in a lot of cases, these experiences become the catalysts for students to pursue graduate degrees or to pursue careers in the sciences or science policy and conservation. So this resource and being able to teach at it is such an important component of what we do in our department. Christian Brown, who's another PhD candidate in my department, he teaches mammalogy and herpetology. And he often speaks about the way students light up and engage when they get the chance to go out there and, you know, see an otter for the first time or hold their very first snake. It really does create these lifelong bonds with nature that just can't be replicated in the classroom.
Our guest is Jeannie Munger, a PhD candidate in the Integrated Biology Department at the University of South Florida. And we're talking about the possible development of 769 acres of land north of the USF Tampa campus. This is WMNF's Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. And Jeannie, you mentioned otters, you mentioned snakes. But for people, which is most of our audience, who haven't been in this USF Forest Preserve, describe what you might see if you went there as a student or as a researcher or as a guest. What other types of animals, plants, and ecosystems would you see there?
Well, when you first walk in from Fletcher Avenue, you walk into a sandhill habitat, which is a fairly imperiled habitat now in the state of Florida, largely because it is prime real estate for development, because it's higher ground. But these habitats are really fascinating and contain a lot of endemic species, a lot of listed endangered species. So you'd see longleaf pines, you'd see gopher tortoises, you'd see a lot of fascinating plant life that is specially adapted to this sandhill ecosystem. We actually have inventoried several listed endangered plant species within the preserve, and that includes things like native and endemic orchids, rain lilies, bromeliads, milkweeds, and several other species. So you'd walk through the sandhill, and then as you walk further north, you end up in a really tremendous wetland area. And this preserve is part of a really significant wildlife corridor that stretches from essentially urban Tampa all the way up to the Green Swamp. And the Green Swamp then is a significant corridor for wildlife throughout the entire state of Florida. So this piece of property is very, very important for all kinds of wildlife that relies on the Hillsborough River watershed. And, you know, it would just be rather devastating to lose this particular piece of property. Within the master plan document that the university put forth, they actually lay out that an expansion of green space is needed rather than a reduction of green space in this area. These ecosystems, both the sandhill habitat, but particularly the wetlands, provide what we call ecosystem services. So they're important in mitigating flooding, as well as in clean water, clean air. And they're also a significantly important component to sequestering greenhouse gas emissions. So, you know, the university is sort of talking about the value, the potential value of this piece of property as it can be transformed. But the property as it is now is incredibly valuable to the community of Tampa Bay and to the state of Florida.
Our guest is Jeannie Munger, a PhD candidate in the Integrated Biology Department at USF Tampa. And we're speaking about the possibility of developing a large area of land that's north of the USF Tampa campus. It's north of Fletcher Avenue between Lettuce Lake Park and the Hillsborough River and the USF Golf Course. And it includes an area that's called the USF Forest Preserve. And this is mainly what we're concentrating here on in this interview, because in Jeannie's department there, she's been saying that there's a lot of research and the field trips that go on there. And the university says this in its request for information. It says the Forest Preserve is used for student and faculty research. More than 70 research papers and peer-reviewed literature have been focused on the Forest Preserve, as have more than 20 master's thesis and PhD dissertations. So this sounds like a very important area, yet the university is exploring the possibility of altering it somehow by letting a company lease it for its use. Maybe reiterate what you think the best use of this would be.
I think the best use of the preserve is, you know, as it exists currently, but I would go even further to say that I think that additional money should be invested into the preserve. We often try to perform prescribed burns on the properties, particularly the sandhill habitat, because this is a habitat that is driven by fire, and a lot of the plants rely on seasonal fire to persist. And it's been increasingly difficult, for instance, for us to perform those prescribed burns because of increased encroachment from urbanization. We think that potentially having a land manager that is specific to this piece of property would really benefit the university. It would benefit the students and researchers, and really make this ecosystem even more valuable than it is currently, as part of this wildlife corridor and this really important place for research.
And since this request for information became public through the reporting by the Tampa Bay Business Journal, you've done some organizing in your department. You've done some reaching out to other people. What are other people at the university saying that you've been talking to, and what's the position of the general group that you're communicating with?
Well, the general position is that we are strongly opposed to any plans to develop this property. Hearing from anthropology, I learned as well that there are Native American burial sites on this property, as well as significant indigenous cultural items. And so just taking the ecological component and the archaeological component into consideration, what we see is that USF could potentially not only be breaking their binding agreement in this master plan, but they may be looking at running counter to several state and federal regulations. There are numerous regulatory laws related to environmental and archaeological resource protection that the university is required to adhere to, and which development is completely incongruous with. So I would say, from the people in several departments that I've spoken to, that the unified voice is we are very opposed to any developments.
Are you calling for people to take any actions?
Currently, there are actions being taken within the university system. And I think once those play out, that we'll see where the university is interested in going with this proposal, and just play it by ear as things develop.
Well, Jeannie Munger, with USF's Integrated Biology Department, a PhD candidate, is there anything else that you'd like to add as a final word to let our listeners know about the importance of this land?
Well, I feel as though I said a lot, but I certainly want to drive home again, that while this is an important place for researchers and students at USF, it's also important for the community. As I said before, because of its mitigating factors, because of the ecological functions that it performs for the greater community, I think it's really important that the citizens of Tampa Bay understand how valuable this ecosystem is to them, even if they're not actively involved in research or study within it.
Well, Jeannie, thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Midpoint. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that was Jeannie Munger. She's a PhD candidate in the Integrative Biology Department at the University of South Florida in Tampa, and she's helping to organize resistance to possible development of the USF Forest Reserve that's north of campus. And you can watch this interview. It's on our website, WMNF.org. And if you want to find out more about their campaign, you can see them on Instagram at save.usfforestpreserve. save.usfforestpreserve on Instagram. And I'm looking at the photos there now. They say that in 2017, USF zoology students placed game cameras there. And since then, they've captured almost 20 species of vertebrate fauna. There's photos there of wild turkeys, of bobcats at night, otters, looks like more. There's a wood stork. So there's a lot of photos of what you can see at the USF Forest Preserve at the Instagram at save.usfforestpreserve on Instagram. This is WMNF Tampa. It's 12:25 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan, and we're talking about a couple of different topics today. One is this USF Forest Preserve, and if you have any thoughts about that, if you've been there or if you like that area, give us a call or don't like it, 813-239-9663. We do seem to have our phones fixed from earlier this morning. Also, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about bicycling and bicycle safety. But let me read a couple of the emails that have come in about this USF Forest Preserve. David writes, "Thank you for this topic today. I hope that the area in question is kept natural and will not be developed. We've done enough to pave over this paradise," is what David says. And then we get a text, it's not signed, from the 813 area code that says, "Hi there, I'm a former environmental science student from USF and a former volunteer park ranger at Lettuce Lake Park. I've taken soil classification field trips to the wetlands that USF is looking to accept development offers on. The uplands provide habitat for gopher tortoises, which require wide open dry areas that are often developed and destroyed. The wetlands provide areas for wetland birds like the threatened wood stork. It would be a tragedy if it becomes developed." So that's a text message from the area code 813. If you have anything you'd like to say about this, give us a call, 813-239-9663, or you can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name, or if you'd like to email us, it's dj@wmnf.org. We're going to take a very short music break right now, but after the music break, we're going to speak with a bicyclist who has some ideas about how to make streets safer. Here's some Bob Marley.
And ships minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had.
Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. It's 12:28 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. We're going to go to bicycle safety in just a minute. I want to read a couple of news headlines that are on the news right now. Investigators say a Florida woman was fatally shot in the head when a neighbor's gun discharged as he was cleaning it a short distance from her home. The shooting happened yesterday afternoon in Jacksonville. Also, the judge in the murder case of George Floyd has refused a defense request to sequester the jury the morning after the death of a black man during a traffic stop triggered unrest in a suburb just outside Minneapolis. The request came from the attorney for former officer Derek Chauvin. That attorney argued today that the jurors could be influenced by the prospect of what might happen as a result of their verdict. The judge said that he will not sequester the jurors until next Monday. That's when he anticipates closing arguments will begin. So that's some news from the Derek Chauvin trial for the murder of George Floyd. And earlier in the show, we were talking about a possibility of developing some dry land, some uplands and some wetlands north of the University of South Florida campus. If you'd like to talk about any of these topics or about our next topic, which is bicycling, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. So our next topic is bicycle safety. Recently, I interviewed Lila Gonzalez. She helped to initiate the St. Pete Critical Mass. We're going to find out what that is if you don't know already. And she spoke with me about a dangerous incident and what she thinks needs to be done to protect bicyclists and pedestrians.
Critical Mass is this world-renowned bike ride that happens. Basically, every big city will do it once a month to kind of take back the streets, in a sense, through cycling. It started in Sweden in the 70s, and then it was brought over to San Francisco in the 90s, and every big city kind of caught on. And So it's kind of a movement for cyclists and kind of a way that we can be seen and, you know, understood that we have rights on the road as well.
When you were participating in a critical mass, there was an incident. Will you tell our listeners what happened?
The incident that just happened wasn't during critical mass, but that one was, I was riding alone. I was riding on First Avenue North, and a car got really close to me going, I would say, about 50 miles an hour. People go really fast on First, and it was a group of guys, and they tried to grab me. I don't know if they were reaching for my bag or me, or, you know, and they yelled something, they were trying to obviously scare me or something, and I could have really gotten hurt. And that's why I made a post about it, because nothing like that has ever happened to me on my bicycle, especially even in a big group. I mean, I feel like I'm safer in a group, but I was just shocked and surprised that something like that happened to me. I've ridden in so many different neighborhoods all over Miami and St. Pete, other parts of the world too. I've ridden a little bit, but it was very shocking to me. I don't want this to happen to anyone or me again. I could have gotten really hurt, so I wanted to kind of talk about it and spread some news so that people are aware and to always be, I guess, just aware of your surroundings.
So what would you say to people then about the safety of bicycling and about how cars interact with bicyclists in St. Petersburg and elsewhere in the Tampa Bay area?
I would say obey all of the traffic laws. Don't show, if you can, temperament, because the motorists get, you know, more aggressive when the cyclist gets aggressive, and you can't do much. You're on a bicycle. I mean, they could just hit you and not even have to be going that fast, and you could die or be paralyzed. And I have friends that have fallen off of their bike wearing a helmet and have had brain injuries. And it's really sad. And I think that it's just something that people need to be more aware of when they're riding bicycles. And, you know, always wear a helmet if you're riding at night, always have lights. Unfortunately, you can't change how people are going to be. There's always going to be certain motorists, I think, that just want bicycles off the road, which is very sad, but it's just how it is.
So far, you've mentioned a lot of things that bicyclists themselves can do, but what would you like motorists to know about riding safely along with bicyclists?
I think it's important to realize that, you know, someone that's riding a bicycle is doing it for one of a few reasons, right? They're either trying to get somewhere, maybe they don't have a car, maybe they love riding the bicycle, they want to, you know, commute, maybe they still have a car, whatever. It's like realizing that it's going to take them so much longer, and just to try to be patient is what I say. You know, before I started cycling a lot, I feel like I was kind of one of those people, not as extreme, but I was still one of those people that was like, oh God, this bicycle is taking forever. But it's really less than 3 minutes usually is what the research has shown, that you're behind a bicycle. And I do believe that there should be some lowered speed limits around St. Pete, especially near downtown, to make it safer. So I think that just being more aware of the cyclists and more education, I think, is really important too. From the beginning of when, you know, you get your driver's license, and even in school, I don't even know if they take driver's ed anymore or whatever, just more education generally so that people can understand this is a new way of like urban living, so to speak. You know, not everyone is going to want to always drive a car. I'm 4 miles from downtown, so why would I drive all the time? You know, it's easier for me to hop on my bike and save gas. And there's so many reasons why I would want to ride. I don't want to be scared and deterred from riding because of people like that, though. Even though it's crossed my mind now, every time I've gotten on my bike since it's happened, I'm like, you know, I kind of surround myself in like, you know, protective light or something. And that's all I can really do. I can hope that everything is okay. You know,
Lila Gonzalez with Critical Mass. I wanted to ask you about a bill that's moving in Tallahassee. It's called HB1. Some people call it the anti-riot bill. Some people call it the anti-protest bill. Certainly Critical Mass could be seen as a type of demonstration, as a type of protest. And one of the components of this bill is that if a driver feels threatened by people in a protest blocking traffic, which is actually, this is one of the components of critical mass. Sometimes they block traffic because there's a lot of bicyclists that a driver could drive into and injure bicyclists in this case without any penalties, with immunity to the law. How does that square with your thoughts about critical mass and about safe bicycling?
I think that that's completely insane, really. I think that everyone deserves the right to the road. When we are doing critical mass, we haven't done it in about a year because of COVID now, and we're going to start back up in April. But when we do it, we really try to get out of the intersection as fast as possible. We have even started splitting up a little bit because of the red lights. But I really hope that does not pass. I mean, I think that that would be just horrible. It's just sad.
What are the details of your April critical mass, and how can people find out more information?
So we have a group on Facebook that we post everything on. And I have a few people now that help organize and help kind of keep the group together, and we'll make routes up. But it's called St. Pete Critical Mass. And so that's where everything is, the event, and you'll see the route and any kind of rules, which there are. You have to wear, if you're under 16, you need to wear a helmet. Front and back lights are required. We do ride at least like 10, sometimes 12 miles. So you need to be able to do that. But yeah, it will be on the last Friday of the month. It's April 29th.
Leila Gonzalez, thank you so much for coming on WMNF today. I really appreciate you telling your story.
Thank you so much.
Well, that was Leila Gonzalez. She helped initiate the St. Pete Critical Mass, and they have another one coming up in the end of April. They have a Facebook page. She spoke with me recently about a dangerous incident and what she thinks needs to be done to protect bicyclists and pedestrians. This is WMNF's Tampa, WMNF's Midpoint Monday. It's 12:37 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. You can reach us if you have a thoughts about this topic, 813-239-9663. Are you a bicyclist? You can email DJ at WMNF.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. We're going to go to the phones in a second. We've had some people patiently waiting. Are you a driver? What do you think about this topic? Give us a call. Let me read a couple of the emails that came in before we go to the phone calls. This is from area code 813, and it says, yes, I'm a biker in the area since 1980, and now it's getting scary that even with more bike lanes, the increase in the number of cars and the aggression is getting worse. So that's from 813 out there in cyberspace. Thank you for that. Also, Karen from Dunedin writes, it's important that the bicyclist makes eye contact with the motorist. I was at Curlew and 19 getting ready to turn left. We had the left turn signal, and it was 5 a.m., and the cyclist came in front of my car. I saw him and stopped, but he was hit by the car in the second left lane. The motorist next to me didn't see them. So thanks to Karen pointing out to make eye contact if you're on bicycles with the motorists. Well, let's see. I'm going to come back to you in just a minute, but I want to get to some of these bicycle callers first, and then I'd love to talk more about the Forest Preserve. So we have Gary in Dunedin. You're on the air. You're a bicycler?
Yes, I'm a serious athlete and bicyclist. I live in Pinellas, and I have to tell you, the problem is huge, and it's not going to be fixed by half measures. Let me give you the context. I'll be brief. First of all, you can go online and look at academic research, clinical research, that titles such as American Attitudes Towards Bicyclists. And you know what Americans' attitudes towards bicyclists are? They're speed bumps. They're in the way. They're environmentalists. They're hippies. They're poor people. And we don't like them. That accounts for a lot of the deliberate, unsafe, reckless driving and aggression towards bicyclists. It also accounts for the fact, as an example, when I was run over, hit and run, in Pinellas in 2017, the sheriff's office said, guess what? You should have already known that Pinellas is in the top three of pedestrian and bicyclist injury and fatality rates in the country and hit and run. It's your fault for riding a bike. If you don't want to get injured, don't ride a bike. And no, we're not going to investigate the hit and run. This is the attitude. If you even have a driver who has done something horrible to a bicyclist, even something that's obviously, quote, not the bicyclist, bicyclist's fault. And in the Netherlands, for example, a country that's much more intelligent than this one, it's never the bicyclist's fault. The bicyclists always have the right of way in every situation, and that's how it should be. But in this county, the bicyclists never have any rights, and the police, too, are prejudiced against bicyclists for the same reasons I enunciated before. Police tend to look at bicyclists as, you know, radicals, hippies, poor people, environmentalists and stuff. They don't like them. So that's the big picture. And all of these bike lanes that are on regular roads, like Gulf Boulevard on the beaches, that is suicidal to ride in a bike lane without a wall between you and motor vehicles. It's insane. Plus, you're breathing all of the exhaust fumes, which is also terrible for you. And the flat-out thing is this. This is the big picture, and then I'll hang up. Americans especially, but most of the world, are addicted to internal combustion engines, and whether it's electric cars or electric bikes or whatever, or fossil fuel cars or fossil fuel bikes. This is garbage. And until we can get people to understand that all of these machines that we turn on, leaf blowers, cars, jet skis, etc., every single one of them is a poisoner and a potential killer, we're never going to make bicycling safe. A bicyclist, be as radical as you can be, and remember, stand your ground.
All right, Gary, thanks so much for that call. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation about bicycling or about the USF Forest Preserve, Lou writes to remind me that the last Friday in April is the 30th. So thank you for that, Lou. I'm not sure if I misspoke or what. I'm sorry. And let's go now to Anonymous, who is going to talk about bicycles. Hi, why do you want to be Anonymous?
Hi. Can you hear me okay, Sean?
I can. Can you tell me why you're not giving your name?
Yeah, because you'll understand very clearly in a moment, because this involves a legal settlement. And so I don't want to give any identifying details. Frank knows who I am, but here's the deal. This is a perfect segue from what you just heard. I have to remain anonymous, because I don't want to give it any details, because I participated in a legal settlement a few months ago, which was the result of my being hit riding my bicycle on a federal highway by someone in a large, heavy vehicle who, quote, didn't see me, end quote. Okay? I was knocked unconscious, first time I've ever been knocked unconscious in my life. I don't remember, the events. Not too surprising. I was airlifted from a location not far from the scene of the accident. And so... you know, it took some time. This happened in 2019. But the reality of the situation is, and this person did not act irresponsibly beyond hitting me. They acted responsibly. They stopped. They identified themselves as law enforcement and all that. But I think it's important for people to hear there can be consequences. My settlement was not enormous, because what I was after was simply to be made whole. But it was a substantial payment that came to me. And there's always in these situations the potential for personal and criminal liability when you actually hit somebody. So, you know, my point there is, okay, you know, you can get out there and hot dog it. And I've had semis come by me at 6 inches on wet pavement. You know, there's nothing accidental about that. They know what they're doing. But it's important to recognize that there, in fact, can be some payback for that in situations in which you behave carelessly. And we do want to remember the 3-foot law in Florida, because just as our friend earlier was talking about the fact that the bicyclist is never at fault in a cyclist vehicle collision, in Florida, you got to be within 3 feet to hit a cyclist. And if you maintain that legally mandated 3-foot buffer, then you're safe and the cyclist is safe. But if you hit a cyclist, you are inside that 3-foot buffer.
All right. Those are good points, Anonymous. I appreciate you bringing them up. I'm going to move on. We have a lot of people waiting on the lines patiently. But thank you for that. I appreciate that perspective. We're going to go now to Mike in Sarasota. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mitch. How are you doing today?
I'm good, but I'm Sean.
Oh, Sean, I'm sorry. Anyway, Sean, my name is Mike Lachey, and I work with Florida Walks and Bikes, and we've been working on bicycle legislation in the state of Florida since the 1980s. And I wanted to comment, make two comments on your guest. By the way, your guest is great. I think she had a great had a great message. First, a suggestion, a partial solution to the question of harassment, and this would require a commitment. But what if the city of St. Petersburg or Tampa decided to that it didn't like harassment, and so it actually hired put undercover detectives on bicycles in high harassment zones. And then after they got harassed, then we just have to have a few high-profile arrests of harassers, and that might put a big dent in it. The second thing I wanted to refer to is she made a comment about education, and I was a lobbyist in 87 and 88, and we installed in Florida a traffic safety education program that goes into the elementary schools, and she was talking about how we need education and even in the elementary school level. That would teach children not only how to bicycle and walk safely and use mass transit, but the huge benefit of it would be we catch children at a very young age, so when they grow up to become drivers, we've already got it ingrained in them. Before, you know, once children reach puberty, they're harder to reach. And once they get to go into driver's license education, they're harder to reach. But if you catch them young and teach them how to be great drivers, that might change the whole road environment dramatically in Florida.
All right, excellent suggestions. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the call.
One thing I wanted to mention. The law was passed, but to this day, probably, and the last I checked, only 4 counties out of Florida's 67 have seemed to have implemented it system-wide in their school system. So we need to go for greater implementation in all of our school systems.
All right, Mike, thank you so much for calling.
Yes, sir.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to switch topics back to our original topic so that we can get Christian on the air very soon. But let me read a couple of these emails that we're writing in about the possible development of the forest and wetland areas north of USF. John in Port Richey says, instead of thinking development, think redevelopment. And he suggests to redevelop the USF golf course and leave the preserve alone. So that's from John in Port Richey. Bill in Jacksonville says he wants to call in on both of the topics and has a lot to pipe in on them and can speak to from deep personal experience. So thank you for that, Bill. Also, John in Sarasota says, take a quick look at what might be happening at the other USF. The things don't happen in a vacuum. And before we get to Christian, I'm going to read this email as well from Gibb. Says, losing more important natural habitat. It seems like the same story over and over, but different locations. When will it stop? This breaks my heart and angers me. The land east of Highway 98 in Bartow leading up to the Circle Bar B Preserve is soon to be developed. Such a shame. I tried commercial for a living and I see it going on everywhere. One of the most heartbreaking is the phosphate industry. Some of the people making fortunes from the sale of these properties don't even live here. They don't care. I think it's time to unite and fight for overall preservation of natural habitat everywhere. Thank you for being a necessary voice, says Gibb. And Christian in Tampa, thanks so much for being patient and holding on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Sean. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, my name is Christian Brown. I'm a member of the USF Forest Preserve Advisory Committee. And I just wanted to point out, kind of add to what Jeannie already pointed out, that this is an issue that concerns not just USF, not just Tampa, but all of Florida. And I would really encourage people who are interested in this issue to take a look at the map. Just go on to Google Earth or take out the map on your cell phone and hit satellite. Take a look at the green spaces that we have through Florida. And there's actually a plan in place. Florida uses a core conservation area concept, and we're supposed to link all of those core conservation areas with wildlife corridors. Tampa is linked to the Green Swamp Wilderness Preserve through the Hillsborough River Corridor. And this forest preserve is the only thing. It's not just another 700 acres. It's the only piece of land that connects the Cypress Creek riparian area to the Hillsborough River riparian area. And so if you look at the map, getting rid of that 700 acres, developing that 700 acres, it's not just losing 700 acres of habitat. You're actually losing much, much, much more. You're creating island habitat. You're separating wildlife, and there will be nothing left on this side of the 75 other than Lettuce Lake Park. And so if you enjoy seeing the wildlife at Lettuce Lake Park, if you enjoy seeing the wildlife even in Tampa, the reason that it's here and the reason that you see it is it has a way to get here. And so getting rid of that 700 acres has huge significance. It would have a huge impact on not just USF, but all of Tampa and all of Florida.
So let me ask you a question then, Christian, and I appreciate your perspective on this. So you're saying that if I might never go inside the USF Forest Preserve, and so I might never get to experience it directly, but I do love to go to Lettuce Lake Park, and I love to see the gators there, and I love to see the wading birds and the songbirds and all the wildlife at Lettuce Lake Park. if Lettuce Lake Park is left intact, but the adjacent wetlands and the adjacent uplands are developed, that would impact what I see at Lettuce Lake Park.
Absolutely. The numbers would plummet. If you take a look at the map, again, Lettuce Lake Park is situated between Interstate 75 and Interstate 275. The reason that you see so much wildlife and so many wading birds there right now is that they don't have that as their only option. They could go upriver, up towards Crystal Springs and the Green Swamp. They could go towards Cypress Creek, towards the 275, and that is all connected through this 700-acre plot that USF owns. So, yeah, if you enjoy seeing the wildlife at Lettuce Lake, you would see a lot less of it because it would be an island or more of an island habitat separated by the 275 and whatever development occurs at the USF Forest Preserve.
All right. Thanks, Christian. I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for your time, Sean.
All right. Thank you. And the number to call in is 813-239-9663 if you'd like to talk about the USF Forest Preserve or if you'd like to talk about bicycling in the Tampa Bay area. Give us a call or you can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Ron in Tampa says, save the USF Preserve in its entirety. The habitat is crucial to threatened species and to river habitat preservation. And then switching back to our bicycle conversation, Bill in Sarasota writes, I'm an avid bicyclist and I drive a car also. There are bad drivers as well as bad bicyclists who ignore the rules of the road. Sometimes I work late while driving home. There are people on bikes with no lights ignoring the rules of the road. The car driver is not always wrong, is what Bill in Sarasota is saying. And then let's go back to the phones. Again, I'm going to give out the phone number, 813-239-9663 is the number you can call in if you'd like to join the conversation live with us here on the air, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. We have John in Holiday. What would you like to say, John?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I used to ride my bicycle a lot. There's times I didn't have a vehicle. Now I mainly drive around. I've been on both sides of this. I've actually been hit by a vehicle. But my biggest problem with the bicyclist safety is, yeah, we have laws that say that we have to share the road with them. And it's always, I always see the guys with the reflective vests that say, you know, it's the law, share the road, that are running stop signs and running red lights on their bicycles. I had a guy very recently on Keystone Road come flying out of a side road, not even hesitating at the stop sign, made a sharp, hard right turn right in front of me. And I'm driving the speed limit down the road. I see it all the time. Yes, bicyclists do have the right to share the road, but they have to follow the laws, too, of stopping at stop signs, stopping at red lights, and waiting for the green light. And that's all I have for that. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, great. Thank you, John. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that. 813-239-9663. We have a text message that came in that says, two song lyrics sum up what's happening to bicyclists, wildlife, and nature in Florida. The first song lyric is, they paved over paradise and put up a parking lot. And the other is, wasting away again in Margaritaville. So thanks for that email from I Am Being. And another text just came in. It says, I wonder if I could actually file a suit against the entire state of Florida for failing to provide more safe roads for bicyclists and pedestrians. That's Bill writing in about his experience with being hit by a bicycle. So we're going to go back to the phone lines right now, but if you'd like to call in, it's 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. It's 12:54 in the afternoon. This is Midpoint Monday. Julia in Tampa, what would you like to say?
Hi, Sean, this is Julia. I want to register a complaint against the bicyclists that ride on the sidewalk. I know, like, along Ehrlich Road, there's a bike lane, and it's really dangerous for them to be out there, so I understand why they're on the sidewalk. But they have no warning devices on their bicycles. They have no bells. They have no horns. You know, they ride right up on. I walk a lot because I sold my car a couple of years ago, and I've been walking most places. And I was hit by somebody on a bike that gave me no warning that they were behind me. They almost act as if you have eyes in the back of your head and you're supposed to know that they're there, you know. And I've had kids ride by and say, we don't have to have, you know, bells or whistles on our bikes. It's like they understand their life being in danger on the road, but they don't understand the danger that they're causing to pedestrians by whizzing up behind us and that kind of thing. So I would really, really encourage, especially for someone to go into school, that like after school, there are a lot of kids who ride their bike home and stuff. and they have no sense of the problems that they're causing for people who are on the sidewalk. I keep yelling at them, this is a sidewalk, this is not a side ride. I understand why you're up here, but please get some kind of a warning device so that you can warn us, you know, from behind it that you're there.
All right. Thank you, Julia. I appreciate that call. And yeah, so just like you should be, cars should be aware of pedestrians and bicyclists. Bicyclists riding on the sidewalk should definitely be aware of pedestrians. That goes for whether it's a walking sidewalk or even if it's like a rails to trails place. Everyone should be watching out for each other, especially if you're going a lot faster than your fellow travelers. It's probably a good idea for you to be paying extra attention. So thanks for that call, Julia. I appreciate that. Let me read a couple of emails that came in. David writes, I would prefer to see more concrete separated barriers to protect bicyclists. You can already see some good examples on Jackson Street in downtown Tampa and on First Avenue South in downtown St. Petersburg. Yeah, so all the way from downtown St. Pete to all the way to the beaches, almost all the way to Boca Ciega Bay around 66th Street and Pasadena Avenue South, they're really altering First Avenue South. And I think it's to add some commuter buses and to possibly separate the bicycle trail a little bit more like it is in downtown St. Pete. So looking forward to seeing what happens there. Also, David writes, there is an open meeting of the Bicycle and Pedestrian Action Committee of the Hillsborough County MPO this coming Wednesday at 5 o'clock. I'll say that again. So the Hillsborough County MPO has a Bicycle and Pedestrian Action Committee, and their open meeting is this Wednesday at 5, says David. So that's important if you are interested in this topic. All right, let's go now to Andy in Dunedin. Hi, Andy. What would you like to say?
Hey, happy Monday. I've been cycling probably 54 years, road bikes, mountain bikes, tandem, recumbent, everything in between. I'm a Florida native. A lot of the safety issues have to do with people, especially on the trail, who do not pay attention to the trail crossing lights. They pay attention to the traffic lights, which really aren't synced necessarily for them, and they don't see that the turn lane, you know, gets a light, and that car, many times I've been turning on a turn lane and here comes a cyclist, and I'm just, you know, it's insane. But there is a certain genre, a certain subculture of cyclists out there who don't play by the rules because it will affect their overall average speed. It'll affect everything that they go by, you know, with all their numbers and everything. So there is, you know, those cyclists do cause problems and make it bad for the rest of us. As far as critical mass, otherwise known as critical clog, that's not necessarily a good idea because then you get a bunch of cyclists out there who think it's a big party, and that just, you know, doesn't make for a good bedfellows, I should say. And your last caller, really quick, she mentioned about people being on sidewalks, and true, you shouldn't be on sidewalks, but there are actually, I've had a number of friends who police have pulled them over and told them to get on the sidewalk. So don't think the law enforcement folks out there even have a clue as what the rules of the road are. But those are just three of my comments, and thanks for a good show. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling in, Andy. I really appreciate that, and I want to thank everyone else who called in. I'm going to see if there's any more text messages and read a couple of these. Ed writes in, he says, thank you for the show. I looked up the study revealing Americans' hostile attitudes towards cyclists that was mentioned by your earlier caller. Very sad to hear callers to your show blaming bicyclists. Many Americans think their huge polluting vehicles are more important than life itself. And he says that, yes, that they're prejudiced against bicyclists, and that our society's primary drug is petroleum. So that's an email that Ed just sent in. I appreciate you letting us know about that. And let me read this other text message that just came in. And this is about the USF Forest Preserve. It says, all of USF property was originally prime sandhill habitat. The silver left, I think is what it says, at the Eco Preserve is a remnant and is vital. Oh, the sliver left. Okay. The little bit of land that's left at that Eco Preserve is remnant of the original sandhill habitat and is vital. Yeah, I believe on USF campus, the tree that used to be behind the Marshall Center is the highest point in Hillsborough County, is my recollection. So all of USF was originally prime sandhill habitat, says area code 813, did not sign the text. But I want to thank everyone who called in and texted, got a lot of great feedback on both of the topics. If you want to watch my interview with the USF student talking about the the possible development of the USF Forest Preserve. That is on our website right now, WMNF.org. And I will put up the bicycling interview later on today, I hope, about the, from Lila Gonzalez. So I want to thank both of my guests, and I want to thank everyone who called in and texted in, etc. Thanks to Frank Knox for wrangling the phones. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned now for Latino 54, coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.